HD Smartcast.
You're listening to a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello and welcome to the HD Brunch podcast. The weekly companion to your printed copy of HD Brunch, where I, your host Karishma Kunzang from Team Brunch, give you a behind the scenes of what you'll be reading on Sunday. There'll be interviews with the biggest Bollywood celebrities talking about things that matter to them. You'll also get to know a little more about the columns by Veer Sanghvi and Seema Goswami from the columnists themselves. Why should you listen to it? Well, it's one of India's top Sunday magazines. It has the best editors, columnists, and opinion leaders bringing you what's happening around town. Listen on for an additional dose of brunch. This series is available on hdsmartcast.com, India's fastest growing podcast producing platform.
Hey guys, how's it going? It's been more than two decades and I still hate it when the chemist wraps up pads in that shame-inducing black packet or old newspaper and gives it to you sneakily. I mean, I always ask them to remove it. I don't see the shame in carrying a pad. I mean, isn't it better than having the person make a mess because of something completely natural and human like a woman's menstrual cycle? What's so uncommon about it? Every woman like goes through it when she hits puberty. Just like men get facial hair. Do we wrap up shaving equipment in newspapers? No. And that doesn't even have anything to do with the concept of ensuring the continuation of the human race. My point is, we as a country have thousands of miles to go before women start talking about their health across the country with ease. For example, did you know that every woman should get a pap smear after she's sexually active? I didn't even know about it till I was out of college. And these are basic life-saving tests. Basics that four millennials, Navya Naveli Nanda, Malika Sahani, Ahilya Mehta and Pragya Sabu have come together to highlight with ARA, the online platform they founded last year. ARA Health has also recently launched their first product, which is Immuted We Stand, and it's a natural vegan immunity product. Well, I caught up with all the four girls and we chatted about their coming of age, the equation with their families when it came to talking about these topics and women's health in India. Hi Navya, Malika, Pragya and Ahilya. Congratulations on your HD Brunch cover and welcome to the HD Brunch podcast.
So let's begin with an incident in each of your lives that made you focus on the subject of women's health. Navya, why don't you start?
I would say that there have been like a lot of instances and incidents where, you know, I've had to go to the gynecologist with my mom because that's typically, you know, how it works in India. Like you go to the doctor with your mom and, you know, there have been situations where I felt really uncomfortable when the gynecologist has asked me specific questions around, you know, like sexual health and, you know, birth control. And I think just it was a very uncomfortable and awkward conversation every single time that I went and, you know, with my mom to get a checkup done. And I think that's probably what got me thinking that, you know, why is it even so uncomfortable in the first place? Because they were all very valid questions, very reasonable questions that, you know, I should be able to answer without feeling so conscious about myself. But for some reason I was. And that, I think, probably was a turning point where I felt that it was probably because, like, I wasn't really told or I didn't really have anywhere to look to, you know, where I could learn how to initiate these conversations. I didn't even know most of the information myself. It was all the stuff that the doctor was telling me. I'd never really done my own research about birth control or like sexual health and stuff like that. So I think it was probably after that one like gynecologist visit where I was just so awkward about it that I said, okay, something obviously needs to change for it to be a little bit easier to have these conversations, not just with a doctor, but also with my mom. I shouldn't feel uncomfortable like speaking to my mom about these things. So I would say that was my incident.
How old were you?
I was, I think, 18 years old at the time.
Oh. So. All right. Anybody else like Malika, Pragya?
I think similar to Navya, it's just been these stigmatized topics that are hard to discuss. And I think what, I wouldn't say it's an incident, more of an event. I think when I went to my university, I really learned about how entrepreneurship can disrupt and create change and create value to environments and really create a community of people who believe in something. And I think that's exactly what ARA is trying to do, take a community and let them know they're cared for and also provide them what they deserve and they need. So I think that's my event. That's been very transcending to why I love ARA and what we're doing.
Okay, all right. Pratyan?
My interest in women's health probably started pretty young. I took a gap year before college. During that gap year, I worked in an NGO called Seva Mandir. For them, I worked in this village, Kotrads, 8 hours from Udaipur on the outskirts of Rajasthan. And a lot of the work I did focused on female child sanitation and domestic abuse for women, against women. So Kotra at the time was one of the 20 poorest villages in India. It's like really was a pretty eye-opening experience because I lived there for 3 months working on this. And, you know, it was the first time you kind of burst that Bombay bubble. I've always been a very big proponent of mental health. And I had already been in therapy. Like I had chosen and asked my parents to like go to therapy because, you know, my cramps and mood swings through my periods were like very severe and I couldn't understand it. Mm-hmm. And being exposed to these women from this very different background really showed me the other extreme of how people suffer and how women suffer, how women's health suffers, because they aren't given a platform to speak. They aren't given a platform where they can learn how to communicate their grievances or even what their grievances actually are and how to address them. So I went to an all-women's college. I've always been very interested in Wellesley College, Wellesley in Boston, yeah. And I've always been very interested in women's health. Even at Wellesley, I was student ambassador for this Wellesley Center for Women for like 3.5 years. And that furthered my interest. I did a lot of just groundwork, field work more so with children and women. And while this was a very serendipitous encounter, I feel like we can all agree, we stumbled upon this as a passion project that we realized we wanted to bring to life because it's something we've genuinely experienced. And if we are facing it, can't imagine how many other women are too.
All right. And Pragya?
Yeah. So for me, I'm an engineer by practice. Like I studied engineering and I worked in healthcare in New York for a long time as well. So I kind of like really think of like, okay, what are the bigger problems and how can we solve them? Like that's kind of training I've had to think. I think healthcare in general, not just specific to just women's health, but healthcare itself just needs disruption. There needs to be more equitable distribution of information. There needs to be more reliable distribution of information. Personally speaking, if something goes wrong, like, you know, there's been times and I've been suffering from a certain condition or a certain symptom, you know, you go to doctor one, they say something else, you go to doctor two, they're in conflict with doctor one, and you kind of like, as a layman, you don't know what next step to take. And oftentimes it just doesn't become like, you know, it kind of sometimes comes down to the fact that, okay, wait, I think if you have to work with me, you need to do it the way I want to do it, or like you do it somewhere else. And as an individual who does not know enough about healthcare, you don't know what to do next. And that's the point I think I've found myself many times. I've seen other like people in as well. And I think for me personally, like through ARA and through all the work that I eventually even do, goal is to really have reliable information, have trusted healthcare change makers in the space where you feel like your health is being taken care of and you don't feel like you need to make this decision without having any information in your head. And so that's kind of where I guess my experience is from.
Okay. And, you know, did you notice incidents related to women's healthcare when you guys were in school as well? Did you notice something happening with a classmate? You know, anything like that?
I mean, I would say when I was in college in America, I realized really the difference between the healthcare system over there and in India, because I realized that it was a lot easier to find that kind of information. There were also a lot more people, especially women, you know, building companies that were creating products and services specifically for women. And, you know, I saw a lot of that while I studied in New York, and I, you know, would always think that, you know, why do we not have something like this in India? Why do we not have, you know, women-centric companies that are founded by women, that are creating products for women? And I think that was probably something that I really took away from my experience abroad, which allowed us, I mean, that planted that seed in my head that, okay, this is definitely a space in India that's untapped, that's not, you know, well catered to. And there are a lot of women here who are looking for that kind of, you know, product or service. And maybe we could be the ones to, you know, bring that here and really be the first kind of, you know, women-centric wellness health brand that doesn't really exist at this point in time. So.
All right.
I can add something. So I went to an all-girls school in India, and then I went to college where it was an engineering college, so heavily dominated by males. So I studied in Calcutta. So I went, my entire like schooling I did in Calcutta, and then I did my undergrad at Georgia Tech. So it was an engineering heavy school. So it was a complete flip side, like from an all-girls school to being like the minority gender in a university. But in the girls school, like I remember this, you know, after we all had our first period and things like that, like after like 6th, 7th, 8th grade, you know, at that age, you're still immature. So it's fine. Like, okay, out of immaturity and innocence and not knowing enough, you may like think these things are like embarrassing or funny, but like you would think that when you're like 17, 18 years old, you'll eventually like start normalizing conversations around like menstruation, or like start keeping like sanitary pads in easy access in bathrooms, because this is like something that every girl is going through every month. And I realized that even in 11th, 12th grade, like if someone was on their period, or it was something that we didn't speak about, and it was just something that was said in a very hush hush way, but each of us in the class were going through that at some point of month. And that's something I didn't like critically think about when I was in school. But when I did come to college, and even though I was in such a different environment of like heavily dominated by males because of it being a typical engineering school, I realized these conversations were not hard at all. And they were just so natural. Like I could talk to men about it. I could talk to women about it. I could talk to anyone I wanted about it, because it was a normal body process. It's like breathing. So that distinction, to talk more about Navya's points also, that distinction became so apparent here, in just from a mindset perspective, that I think was also a critical factor in aligning, binding all of us together. We all studied in India, then we all came here in different capacities. I think we probably all like noticed it in some shape or form.
Yeah, and I would like to add on to that too. Funnily enough, I had an opposite reaction to Pragya. So I went to an all-girls school where talking about your period and all of this was super open. So when I went to my co-ed, this was in Bombay.
Mumbai.
Okay. Yeah. And when I went to college, it was again a hush-hush topic. And I think that really brings to light what Ara is trying to do, because we have these closed spaces, we have these communities where women are safe and they can talk. And that's exactly what was happening when I was growing up. It was just women. We were all playing sports aggressively, you know, just like guys. I would say we were equal or more aggressive than men. And it just showed me what a safe community can really achieve, and how open it can be, and how uplifting it can be. And I think that's what we're all trying to do through Ara as well.
All right.
I was in elementary and middle school with Malika, I guess. But switched high schools in Bombay only, and went to a co-ed environment. And I don't think topics were a bit taboo there. Everyone was relatively progressive, but it was never a safe environment. It was never an empowering environment. It wasn't very like uplifting. It was very competitive, very like, if you're doing well, I want to do something that I can make sure I'm doing better. And Wellesley was very different. And so Wellesley allows you to take classes that other institutions, Babson, MIT, a few others. I've always noticed in those classrooms that if there was a Wellesley girl present, she was generally louder than like an average MIT girl. Okay. And it's something that gave me a lot of comfort, knowing that that was like that community, that safe space can actually have that impact. And like, I fundamentally believe that. I can feel like it's something I think is what we can really use to just change the space and uplift women.
All right. And what was it like with your own families? Did your parents sit you down and explain coming of age? How important is that? Because my mom never told me. So I just randomly, like this kid who didn't know about it tells me that, oh my God, you're dying. And I believed it till I told my mom. She came back from work and I told my mom, and my mom started laughing. I mean, I'm telling her that I'm dying and my mother's laughing. So I was shocked for 5 minutes. I was like, what is wrong with you? And then she's like, yeah, it's going to happen every month. I'm like, what? So, you know, did any of you not, I mean, I'm sure you guys, I don't know what your experience has been like. So with your families, so go ahead.
I mean, I definitely had the first period conversation with my mom. She did sit me down and, you know, explained everything to me. She also, like, you know, would tell me to pack like a period kit and take it to school in case I get my period at school. So we definitely had the period conversation, but I don't personally, I've never had like a conversation about birth control or like sexual health or sex or any of that. Like, I've never had like that kind of conversation with her. Not because I feel uncomfortable too. It's just that I've always spoken to my friends about it. I've never gone directly to her with something, but I feel that if I did have a question, I could go to her, but I've never had an explicit, like, direct conversation with her about that.
Okay. And they've also never tried to sit down and try to have the birds and bees conversation.
Oh, definitely not.
Okay. What about you guys, Malika, Pragya?
So for me, I guess my first, like when I got my first period, I was on my way to play tennis and I think I had a huge match and that's when it happened. And I remember going to my mom saying, something is wrong. There's something seriously wrong. But I think I was well aware what a period was, what's supposed to happen. I think I wasn't prepared for the pain that comes with it, because I think women fundamentally don't express pain in the way they should. It's always, you know, the mother is taking care of you. They'll never say, oh, I'm PMSing, I'm having a bad day, I can't help you with something. So I think I wasn't prepared for that. But no, I have a very open relationship with my mother and father. If I have my period, I'll tell my father, even if he doesn't want to hear it. I'm like, I'm in pain. You have to deal with it.
Okay.
So I think I'm blessed with that. And I'm really fortunate to have such an open-minded and welcoming childhood that always allowed me to be very understanding of everything around me.
So even similar to you, actually, Karishma, the first day I had my period, I thought I was actually going to die. And I'd like lock myself up in the room, be like, okay, this something, like something's going to happen. Even though my mom had told me about what periods were, my friends had gotten it and I'd studied it in school too. But I didn't realize what actually happens. Like conceptually, it had made sense to me. But when it happened to me, I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, it's leaking through my clothes. What is happening? I'm going to die. And then similarly, my mom laughed at it. And it was like a pretty easy conversation. And even like similar to that, I feel like Malika, what she said, like, I have a really open relationship within my family. And I never now think about like talking like, oh, I'm on my period, so I don't feel like doing this. Like, I feel like that openness is there, and it's there with my younger sister who's younger to me. Like it's there. Like, it doesn't matter irrespective of gender, and thankfully those we don't really think about even like before seeing it anymore, which is really good. And I'm married now, so like the conversation about like birth control and stuff is like something I just don't have with anybody. So I feel like generally like those conversations I wouldn't even have with friends so much. Not even like, it's not about like family or parents, it's just things that you want to talk about. If I needed to talk about it, I would, but I've never had to. So it's just been like, it's not been of prime importance, but I couldn't imagine like being uncomfortable talking about it with thankfully my like close family and friends.
All right. And Alia?
So yeah, kind of like everyone else, I have a very close, very open relationship with both my parents. Unlike everyone else, I'm a younger sibling. My elder sister is about 6.5 years older than me. She also went to an all-women's college. So, you know, a lot of these conversations at least for her, started very early, and I was privy to them. So whether it was on the menstrual cycle, whether it was sex, whether it was boyfriends, safety, mental health, anything really, it's been a very easy and open dialogue for me. It's not like I'm going to go to my parents and say, hey, you know, I met a guy and I want to date him and things like that. It's,
But I
probably wouldn't do that with anyone. I mean, other than my like closest friends. And I don't think I would want to talk about my personal relationships with anyone, with another person.
Yeah.
That said, when a situation arises that I do, to the contrary, my parents are the first people I will turn to.
All right. And when did you guys realize that it wasn't the same thing for other girls in India? I mean, Alia, I mean, I'm sure you are somebody who's seen it on the field, but, you know, for the rest of you, when did you realize it really wasn't the same, that, you know, having a pad was kind of a luxury for a lot of people, you know, or even knowing about it?
I can go. I mean, I think even before, you know, ARA really came about, but also a lot more during, like, I worked a lot with, you know, an NGO my NGO, through which we like did a lot of work around, you know, period poverty. And I mean, I was always aware that, you know, there isn't that luxury of sanitary pad access to a lot of women in India. And, you know, we hear stories about it. But I think it's only when I really saw it on ground that I realized how severe that actually was, and you know how limited the facilities were over there. And like, I personally believe that a sanitary pad is almost like a human right. I think everyone should be able to have access to it, and it's unfair that, you know, because of say a certain location or a certain, you know, that people aren't able to access them. So I think it's probably when I really worked on ground that I realized the severity of it. And seeing it up close was sad, because it makes you feel grateful for, you know, the luxuries that you have, and for, you know, something as simple as a sanitary pad that we take for granted. You know, it's crazy to even imagine that there are women out there who don't have access to it and have to use things like leaves or mud or, you know, cloth to as substitutes. So I think it makes you a lot more grateful for what you have, even if it's the smallest thing, and also like pushes you in a way to do your part to, you know, help. You know, help that. And I think we did that through ARA also during the lockdown last year. We actually contributed by doing a fundraiser to raise money for distribution of sanitary pads in low-income communities in Mumbai. So, you know, we really wanted to also, you know, not just be a business or a company that focused on, you know, profits, but we really wanted to be a very holistic brand that was also giving back to society in some way. And, you know, these women may not be our consumers today, but they will be tomorrow. So, you know, we want to try and help in any way that we can to all sections of society, you know, whether they are our direct consumers or not. So,
yeah, anybody else would like to add something? Yeah, Malika.
No, I mean, I think just echoing a lot of the sentiments, I think another piece of this is not just the access to sanitary pads and hygiene products. It's also like sometimes you're living in the most privileged families, or you have enough of privilege and you have access to the products, but it's such a taboo within your house to even like enter the temple, enter the kitchen, touch the food. And that also goes down to saying just accessibility and like progressiveness is an issue, like accepting someone who's going through this at the time when like it's natural for your body to go through, and then like shunning that person away and in the most obvious manner where like you specifically on these 3 days can't do XYZ things. It's like everyone knows why you can't do it, but you can't do it and you can't talk about it. And I've seen that in, you know, some parts of like my extended family. I've also seen that in some of my closest friends, and everyone's had the luxury to afford, you know, menstrual pads and things like that. But still the fact that thing just doesn't end there. It has to like see through and become normalized in conversations and behavior and lifestyle. And I think that's the part where I realized that there was disparity even within people that could afford pads. Like, of course, there's disparity within India. It's a huge country between rural and urban and privileged. There's no doubt about that. But even within our like immediate people that we spend time with and relate with, there is a lot of disparity between what you can speak about, what you can't speak about, and how uncomfortable just every 3-4 days of the month you need to be in your own house. So that was something that was kind of like eye-opening to me as well.
All right. And Alia?
You know, the reason we're trying to come up with like our own products is because we've personally faced these challenges and we want to build something for ourselves. We have been taking our own supplements for the last 3-4 months now. My family, Malika, Navya, Pragya, I'm pretty sure all our families are taking it. You know, it's the idea is to build something on a foundation of trust and to be transparent, because a lot of people don't get that at home.
Moving on to the next question, which is not talking about women's health is not necessarily an economic or classist thing. It's more a conservative versus progressive mindset divide. Do you agree to this statement? And also, if you do, then how does one change that?
It does. Like, I don't know if it's so black and white in each of those options you gave. Like, it's either progressive or liberal, or it is economic or societal. Like, I think
classes.
Classes. It's definitely not so black and white that you can pinpoint and this is the reason why this is happening. It's definitely a combination of everything. It's super gray, but I think like fundamentally it does boil down to how progressive you can be or how liberal you can be to talk about these things. It could kind of like sometimes I think like, how is it that we're still fighting to talk about this? Like, how is this even a situation that we are in? That is just absurd to me that, you know, the fact that this is not even normalized yet, it's bizarre. We go through this every month. It's a normal occurrence. It's these conversations around feminine health, women health, are such basic things that we want to talk about to seek good care. The fact that we can't, I think it's absurd, but it does boil down to how progressive you are.
Yeah, I think I definitely echo Pragya's statement. It's not black and white. I think there are too many variables at play here at this point. I think progressive people can also be very naive about women's rights or how to communicate or how to even respect women at some points. For example, someone may be super progressive in thought, but will not hire women. Or maybe super progressive in thought and still pay women less than a man who's doing half the job, right? These things exist today. It's not that they're not progressive in the sense that they're not recognizing that the issue exists. They are not progressive to the point where they're creating this equality. And I think that equality is going to take time. And it's going to take time because it's inbuilt in us. A woman was traditionally a caretaker. A man is traditionally a kind of a fighter or a hunter. And I think this it's going to take time to change, but I think we're on our way there. Has there been change? Yes, there has been some change. Is the change to the point where equal and there's no difference between a man and woman? No, I think there are biological differences also. So there'll always be some kind of difference. Yeah. Do I think women deserve more rights today? Absolutely. All around the world. It's not just in India. It's everywhere in the world. And I don't think we can say India's the issue or like developing countries are the issue. No, absolutely not. It's everywhere.
All right. And what is the most interesting thing that you've all learned from the live sessions and conversations that Ara Health has been organizing? Any success story that warmed your heart or something that you'd like to share?
There's so many.
So I think Ahila alluded, we do these community sessions every 2 weeks or so, which we sometimes invite doctors, invite health experts, or sometimes it's just us. And we talk about different topics and allow for a safe space. So we literally just, you know, turn the key, give the topic, and everyone's like bubbling with enthusiasm to share their version of their stories and things like that. And one thing that we heard recently, which really, I think all four of us like literally started crying when we kind of heard this, was one of our community members. She said because of our posts, she was able to actually timely diagnose her grandmom with breast cancer, because we put these posts up for doing a self breast exam every month where you kind of like feel your breast for lumps, and there's a technique to do that. We put that out every month, and apparently her grandmom was had some kind of a wound, and they didn't pay attention to it. They just thought the lump was in relation to that. Her grandmom was going through a lot of pain, and she just happened to see this post and conduct the self-breast exam. She felt something was off and wrong, because oftentimes, like, breast cancer in the beginning stages is not associated directly with pain. It's like you're feeling different things in your breast, the secretions, the breast is starting to look weird, but it's not always like breast pain. So it's not like, oh, this is paining, let's go get it checked out. So the fact that she was able to diagnose her grandmom in time for with breast cancer, took her to the doctor, and literally she told us that she showed the page to the doctor saying that this is how I found how to do this. And the doctor was like, you know, you should thank them because you were able to get your grandmom to the clinic at the right time. And the fact that like an Instagram post has done that is insane. Yeah. And we were all so overwhelmed by this story and the power of like high quality, reliable medical information. Yeah. The power of this kind of information actually has, the reach it has and the potential it has to change someone's life like in a second.
Thank you so much, guys, for doing this.
I'll be honest, I'm partial to the Hyderabadi preparation of biryani, and I appreciate it even more if it's spicier. I mean, the spicier, the better. But I do like any well-made biryani. I love the Kolkata version with the egg and potato, which allows variation of texture and bites. And flavors, of course. The Lucknowi one is another favorite, but I've grown to love this version of Hyderabadi mutton biryani that I learned of Chef Kunal Kapoor's YouTube video, even though I'm not a fan of mutton. But man, it's a fantastic meal every single time. And when I order in, I end up going for biryani by kilo, whether I'm in Delhi or Bombay, because it's just easier, I guess. And I really love the cute handi and the little candle and, you know, that they give it away. Then you're supposed to, like, put a little bit of dum. I mean, yeah, presentation is just a part of it, but it's also really, really good to taste. But let's hear what HT Branch columnist V. Sangvi has to say about the dish.
We all know that biryani provokes strong emotions, but what we sometimes don't realize is that it also provokes stupidity. You know, I can understand the strong emotions. I can understand people from Kerala saying that our biryani is better than Hyderabad, or people from Hyderabad saying that our biryani is better than Lucknow. I mean, I may not agree with all of that, but I understand it. But the stupidity I can't understand. For instance, there's this notion that all biryani has to be royal. It has to have come from a court. Let's take Calcutta biryani, which is really the biryani of the masses. Every time you say that, somebody from Calcutta jumps up and says, no, it is Wajid Ali Shah's biryani. It is made for a royal court. The potatoes were like truffles. They were really expensive in those days. I mean, all of this is nonsense. So this week, I've looked at biryani. We know that biryani was created during the time of the Mughals, but all the evidence suggests that the emperors did not eat biryani. They preferred yakhni pulao. Biryani was a dish that was made in large quantities, and it was meant to feed large numbers of people, not just emperors. So if you had an order to these things, pulao was the classic court dish, the royal dish. Biryani was the mass dish. Does that make sense to you? Maybe not. Read my piece and see if I convince you.
I have lived through 3 Mumbai monsoons and about 8 times that in Delhi. And both the cities come with their own sets of pros and cons. I've loved every monsoon in Delhi, waiting for it eagerly every June. Or, well, sometimes July. And I love walking around in central Delhi, or more specifically, Chanakyapuri after it rains. Or even just, you know, opening the doors of the balcony and letting in the refreshing air, even though people complain that there's a lot of pollution in the capital. I mean, I've faced quite a few angry storms too, and waded through water once at the ITO bridge, which is always waterlogged. In Mumbai though, it's been a different story. I thoroughly enjoy the rain, unless I'm living on the ground floor, and until I have to step out. Then traveling is a nightmare, and most of the times the entire day just goes stuck in traffic. I appreciate the spirit of people during the floods, but they really shouldn't have to deal with it every year, no? Anyway, the one thing that remains common between the two is the city looks and smells insanely beautiful after a spell of rain. Here's what HT Brunch columnist Seema Goswami has to say about the season.
People tend to laugh when I say this, but monsoon really is one of my favorite times of the year. There is something so magical about seeing those dark clouds gathering on the horizon, bearing the rain that will release the magnificent smell of petrichor from the parched earth and bring solace to all of us suffering from the blistering dry heat of a North Indian summer. I can spend entire days just gazing out of the window, watching the sky change color, marveling at the rain as it comes crashing down, and luxuriating in the cool breeze that accompanies it. This year, though, I had a long wait on my hands as the monsoon was delayed in Delhi for 1 week, then another, and then yet another. And such was my frustration at the state of affairs that I decided to do something that I hadn't done in my entire life. I decided that if the rains would not come to me, well then, I would go to where the rains were. So it was that I arrived in Goa one cloudy afternoon, braving a flight from Delhi. The moment I stepped off the plane and smelt the moisture in the air, I was in heaven. As I drove to the hotel, the dark clouds threatened rain, which finally came pouring down after I checked into my room. That was my cue to take up residence on the balcony and just watch the skies open up. Read more about it in my column this Sunday and wish you a very happy monsoon.
She's a millennial who's making all the right noises, whether it comes to addictive music that you cannot help but listen to on loop, or her completely relatable Instagram posts, which are humorous or making a point in a clear and classy way. I'm talking about our recent HT Brunch social media star of the week and Delhi musician Kamakshi Khanna, who's just come out with a track with Nishchay Parekh of indie act Parekh & Singh. While I really love that track, I feel it wouldn't be fair to make you guys listen to it without giving you a soundbite of a previous release, Dur, featuring Oaf. Hope you enjoy it.
Hey guys, I'm Kamakshi Khanna, and this is an acoustic version of my song, Dur. Hope you guys like it.
Pata kyun hai pata tera mera pata kam ka kyun ho gaya tundla sara sita gehre gehre pani jaise gehre hai ye इस पल में डूबना था फिर क्यों तैरे हम क्यों है दूर 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 क्यों है दूर दूर मेरे पास है तू मगर साथ है नहीं पहचान है पर पहली सी बात है नहीं गहरे गहरे Ooh.
Thank you so much for listening. That was a song called Dur. Hope you guys have a great Sunday brunch.
The weekend is when you take a break from a hectic week, whether it's work from home or work from work. It's also a day to develop perspective on things by not just consuming news, but also analyzing it by listening to different points of views and figuring out what you feel about it. We hope we've been able to do just that with today's HT Brunch podcast. Feel free to give us feedback and suggestions on HT Smartcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or DM us directly at HT Brunch on Instagram and Twitter. To listen to more podcasts, log on to htsmartcast.com or suno Naye Nazariye Se. I will see you back here next weekend with another dose of entertainment that keeps things real. Till then, happy brunching, guys.
This was a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HT Smartcast. HT Smartcast.